Thank you to the choir for singing two good songs having to do with hope for this world, hoping that freedom spans east and west and north and south. That was the hope when the United Nations was founded 70 years ago, in 1945. And these are the articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or some of the articles that were drafted around that time in the United Nations in the hope that all countries would recognize these basic human rights. So I'm going to read just a few of those articles. Article 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act toward one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Article 4. No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. Article 5. No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Article 6. Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. Article 13. Everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. Everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to that country. Article 18. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others, and in public or private, to manifest religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. Skip to Article 25. Everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself, nowadays they would say, and herself, and family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond one's control. Part of Article 26 states, everyone has the right to education. Education shall be free, at least in the elementary and fundamental stages. Elementary education shall be compulsory. Education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality and to the strengthening of respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. These are just some of the articles. They express hope more than reality in some parts of the world, even today. So today's service salutes the accomplishments of the United Nations on its 70th anniversary year. When I was growing up in the 1950s, the world sometimes seemed to me like a very dangerous place. There were bomb shelters, and I know some of you recall this. We had bomb drills in school, remember those, where we would dive under our desks as if that would protect us from a nuclear attack. I remember that even sometimes the sound of airplanes frightened me as I thought, this is it. It's all over. My friends and I shared some of our recurrent nightmares of nuclear holocaust with one another, and we had them quite frequently in those days. In the sixth grade, I remember taking a trip, a school trip, into Manhattan from my home in Queens to visit the United Nations. And I remember being very impressed as we walked through the doors. We saw people dressed in all kinds of garb from various world nations, some of it very colorful and very different from what we were used to seeing. We sat in the General Assembly chamber doing some small international meeting, and we put on headphones and listened to the instantaneous translation of a speech into a myriad of languages. We saw people from a variety of countries, and I remember feeling proud that this remarkable international enterprise was headquartered in my country. In fact, right in my own city. I feel something very different now, although I still believe that the UN is a remarkable place. I feel embarrassed about my country's lukewarm support of the United Nations, embarrassed that we are still in arrears of our debt to that institution, to the tune now of around $3 billion. And I feel saddened that the UN does not get the recognition it deserves in this country. It's a strange phenomenon. The UN accomplishes a great many things in the course of a year, basically on a shoestring budget. Yet we in the US hear little about what it does in the popular media. There seems to be a perception in this country that the UN is weak and ineffective. And many of our legislators believe that the public is lukewarm in its support of the UN. But when people are polled, quite the opposite is found to be true. According to recent polls, a solid majority of Americans hold a favorable view of the United Nations. In one poll, 89% of Americans agreed that it is important for the U.S. to cooperate with other countries through the United Nations. And in another, 79% of Americans wanted to see the UN strengthened. But somehow the perception of the weakness of this institution persists. I have a book at home about the sacred sites of different peoples around the world. It pictures Stonehenge in England, the pyramids of Egypt and the pyramids of Central America, the ancient temples at Delphi in Greece, and so on, sacred sites the world over. But there is one site that is missing. It's the tall, flat building in Midtown Manhattan that houses the United Nations. There's one little office in that building that is the only religious non-governmental office inside the building, and that's the Unitarian Universalist United Nations office. Many of us, there are other non-governmental religious organizations, but they're not housed right there. Many of us Unitarian Universalists revere the United Nations, even with its shortcomings. To my surprise, a few summers ago when I was back in New York, this time as a tourist, so therefore I did touristy things, which I never did when I lived there. I took a boat ride around Manhattan. I had never done that before. And I remember as we passed the United Nations, I got a tear in my eye and a catch in my throat passing that flat building as I saw it from an entirely new angle being on that boat. And realize that it really is a sacred place to me. The seven principles of Unitarian Universalism guide our congregational lives. And of those seven principles, five of them can be directly related to the work of the UN. I would like to offer just a couple of examples of how the work of the United Nations supports each of these principles that we hold dear. There's our first principle, which calls on us to affirm and promote the inherent dignity and worth of every person. The United Nations has affirmed this value, especially through its work in the area of human rights. Since adopting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, which I read from earlier, the United Nations has helped enact many agreements on political, economic, and cultural rights. By investigating complaints of human rights abuses, the UN Human Rights Commission has generated international pressure on governments to improve their human rights records. Promoting women's rights is another way in which the UN supports the worth and dignity of every person. The UN Development Fund for Women and the International Research and Training Institute for the Advancement of Women have supported programs to improve the quality of life for women in more than 100 countries. These are just some examples. Our second principle is justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The United Nations was a major force in bringing about the downfall of the South African apartheid system, which the General Assembly of the UN called a crime against humanity. Justice, equity, and compassion is also promoted by the UN humanitarian aid. There are so many branches of the UN that work with humanitarian aid. More than 50 million refugees fleeing war, famine, or persecution have received aid since 1951. And there are more than 20 million refugees who are now receiving food, shelter, medical aid, education, and help with repatriation, including the recent surge of Syrian refugees and other refugees from the Middle East. The International Fund for Agricultural Development has worked to end hunger and rural poverty. It has helped 300 million people in around 100 developing countries. The UN World Food Program, the world's largest humanitarian agency, feeds some 90 million people in over 70 countries every year. Also, on the compassion part of that second principle, the UN adopted a resolution prohibiting landmines in 1999, and 14 different UN departments, programs, and agencies are involved in educating people about the dangers of landmines and clearing mines from former battlefields in places like Afghanistan, Angola, Cambodia, El Salvador, and Vietnam. Thousands of people still are maimed and killed every year because of landmines. Now, our third and fourth principles are internal to our congregations: encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations and a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. But the very next one moves us back into the larger world. Number five, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. The United Nations has promoted democracy by enabling people to participate in free and fair elections in 45 countries, such countries as Cambodia, Namibia, El Salvador, Eritrea, Mozambique, Nicaragua, and South Africa. It has also provided electoral advice, assistance, and monitoring of results. The UN has also played a role in promoting self-determination and independence in countries that are now UN members. Our sixth principle is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. The work for peace throughout the world is one way in which the UN has tried to build world community. It has acted as a mediator by making judicial settlements of major international disputes, such as those involving territorial issues, non-interference in the internal affairs of countries, hostage taking, the right of asylum, rights of passage and economic rights among countries. Over 300 international treaties on such issues as the use of outer space and the use of the seabeds have been enacted through the efforts of the UN. Through the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN has helped minimize the threat of a nuclear war by inspecting nuclear reactors in 90 countries to ensure that nuclear materials are not used for military purposes. I can't help but wonder, what would have happened back in 2002 if we had waited and insisted that the UN go back into Iraq to inspect for weapons of mass destruction instead of invading the country, only to discover after our military involvement that there were still no such weapons, since the UN had inspections had demolished them a few years before. Might have been a very different outcome. Our seventh principle, of which we are especially proud, since we are the only mainline religious denomination to have made an ecological principle part of our official statement. And that one urges respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. The United Nations has worked in many, many ways to protect the interdependent web, our precious environment. The Earth Summit of 1992 resulted in treaties on biodiversity and climate change, and all countries there adopted a plan to promote sustainable development while protecting natural resources. Another UN treaty has resulted in a global effort to reduce chemical emissions of substances that have caused the depletion of the ozone layer, which was a very successful campaign. Through the UN Global Environment Facility, countries have worked to curb conditions that cause global warming. One UN organization monitors marine fishery and the production of fisheries to prevent overfishing. Another has worked through several UN agencies to create and carry out reforestation, plans for reforestation in about 90 different countries. The UN Environmental Protection Agency led a major effort to clean up the Mediterranean Sea. And in this project, we saw traditional adversaries like Syria and Israel, Turkey and Greece working together to clean up the Mediterranean, to clean up the beaches in particular that were quite polluted and unusable. Now more than 50% of once polluted beaches are usable. The UN Population Fund has created family planning programs to help people make informed choices, which has given families, and especially women, greater control over their lives. The UN has sponsored several conferences on climate change, and the UN Kyoto Protocol, signed by industrialized nations and those moving to a market economy, has commitments from those nations for the limitation and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. Well, the list of UN environmental efforts goes on and on. So it would seem that our own Unitarian Universalist values mesh nicely with the values that are affirmed on a daily basis in that flat, tall, sacred space in Manhattan. The total operating expense budget for the entire UN system, including all the funds, all the programs, all the agencies, comes to about $30 billion a year. Compare that to the military budget for the US alone, around $500 billion. After veterans' benefits and some of the expenses of the war on terror, supplemental costs are taken out, we still spend $500 billion. World military expenditures amount to a whopping $1 trillion plus annually. I mean, these are astronomical figures that are hard to imagine. That amount would pay for the entire United Nations system for another 70 years. It would seem that the UN is the best value on the planet, dollar for dollar, yen for yen, ruble for ruble, pound for pound. There are so many people in need throughout the world. Their problems may seem overwhelming, but our support of the United Nations clearly makes a difference in the lives of many in need. And it makes a difference to the future of life on this planet that we share. The UN is by no means a perfect organization. It has definitely had its setbacks and failures in the 70 years of its existence. But there is no other organization quite like it, no other comprehensive international forum for the exchange of ideas among nations on how to solve the monumental problems of the world, no other coalition of nations dedicated to peacekeeping, human rights, and environmental preservation. The UN is it. So we need a strong and empowered United Nations. When countries like India and Pakistan or Korea get into dangerous muscle flexing with nuclear testing, I start to feel like I'm back in the 1950s, a little girl hiding under my desk in a useless bomb drill, worrying about nuclear destruction. And I look to the United Nations to bring pressure to bear on those nations. In 1977, the anthropologist Margaret Mead was asked once, "If we humans are truly social animals, why do we seem to have such a difficult time getting along with one another?" Good question. "Why are so many wars fought? Why is there so much hostility and aggression and intolerance among people?" Well, here was Margaret Mead's answer. She wrote, "99% of the time we humans have lived on the planet, we have lived in groups of 12 to 36 people. That is to say, we've lived in small groups of people probably related to us. People who looked just like us, thought like us, ate and behaved like us. We simply never needed to learn how to tolerate anyone who was different from us." And then she writes, "But in the last 300 years, the population of the world rocketed from 500 million to 4 billion in just 300 years. Well, as we know, same figure that Norman Cousins said in that reading we read together. It's now 7.5 billion. She went on to say, "We simply haven't had enough time to learn how to get along in such a crowd of strangers." Since she made that insightful comment, another 3.5 billion people, as I said, have been added to this planet. And so we have only the United Nations as a beacon of hope, a cooperation among nations in this increasingly crowded, dirty, dangerous, and troubled world. The UN is a nursery school for learning how to finally get along. So I would say we need to support the UN in whatever way we can. I thought about providing lots of paper for you, but you can find it all easily. Go on to the internet and find about all the different agencies you can contribute to within the United Nations, and there's tons and tons of information easily at your fingertips. We can make contributions to whatever agency we would like to. Perhaps in light of the touching stories of refugees coming into Europe from the Middle East, we could support the High Commission on Refugees of the UN. We could support UNICEF. Some of our children do trick-or-treat for UNICEF, many agencies, all of which need our support. We can also support our UU United Nations office. And here's another source of support we can be for the UN. We can urge our legislators and administration to pay up what we owe to the United Nations. By supporting the United Nations, we are expressing our love for this beautiful, fragile planet that we call our home. And we can express our love for the world.